Hello and welcome to Series 3 of the Learning and Development Challenges podcast. Once again, Adam from AssembleU here as your host. And today I'm joined by Rebecca Tisdale. Rebecca is a curious and technology-focused global learning leader with over 17 years L&D experience. Her career has taken her on a journey through various sectors, including technology, cybersecurity, digital infrastructure, and retail. She specializes in implementing global transformation programs through consulting, designing, leading, and coordinating cutting-edge learning programs to serve global audiences. Rebecca is also a self-confessed technology geek with a passion for curating fun and engaging learning experiences and delivering just-in-time training in the flow of work. She's also a fellow of the RPI and sits on their membership board of advisors. Rebecca, it's a genuine pleasure to have you join us today.
Hi, nice to be here.
Fantastic. Cool. So as I hinted in the intro, you've had a really interesting career path in learning and development. And I wanted to start there, if you like, unpack that a little bit. So can you tell us a little bit more about how you got started in L&D and then your journey through it so far?
Yeah, of course. Well, I started off as a training coordinator. My first training role was in a company that trains up electricians nationwide to learn how to be electricians. And that was a really fun job, just learning in sort of my early career days, learning how to coordinate different things, learning how to juggle, learning how to keep lots of different pans bubbling and boiling, and sort of in essence run an event, because every training course back in the day of ILT being the primary source, that was an event. So making sure there's a room, there's catering, there's people, there's a trainer, there's books. Back in the day when we had books as well.
I remember those. Yeah.
Attended a class. And then since then, I just followed a sort of path of training coordinating. I realized that I was quite good at the coordination aspect and keeping lots of different things going at the same time. Before starting as a training coordinator, I was actually an events manager in a hotel. So that's very similar in terms of training courses, because an event, you still need a room, catering, people. You know, it's still very much the same sort of format. So I really found that I was really good at coordinating, organizing. And so that led me down the path of training in L&D. And then from there, went into more of the blue chip security and IT companies. I was living in Berkshire at the time, which is sort of the Silicon Valley of the country. So a lot of the big tech firms were there. And I sort of worked my way around that, is doing training coordinating.
Great. And then how did you make that jump from, I guess, trainer into more strategic learning and development where you are now?
My roles have been very much looking after either in internal training courses where you train up your own staff, or external where customers would pay to come on a seat in a course. And then the more into the IT realm that I got, the more technical it became in terms of software engineers, developers, cybersecurity engineers. And so there we got more into the technical side of things. And so some of our customers, for instance, wanted to purchase, say, an on-site training course for a cybersecurity bit of software they've just bought to install. So we would have to send our trainers out into the desert in the middle of Saudi to a big oil company. The bandwidth for the technical aspect of the software development and sandbox areas for them to train in, where kind of the latency wasn't there because they're in the middle of a desert. And so we had to really think on the fly of, like, how can we deliver this course, not in the normal traditional out of the box sense, how can we deliver to a very demanding customer and still give the best that we can? And so that led me down a path of curating things that were kind of not off the shelf solutions. And I found that I was quite good at that. I was quite good at looking at logistics, looking at different ways of looking at a challenge and trying to solve for it, especially if it's on the day and it's sort of time pressure and you get that adrenaline going to have to think about different ways of doing things. And so that led me into a path of going to work for a company that does digital infrastructure and upholds the infrastructure of the internet around the world. And that became more deskless workers. And the people that keep the lights on of the internet around the world and keep it up and running. So mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, people that have grown up sort of on the tools and gone into a deskless job, for instance, as a mechanical engineer, because they want to learn hands-on in their role, but also they're doing mission critical roles. They're doing roles where it's 365, 24 hours a day, it's shift work, it's hard work, it's manual. And so how do we deliver training to them? How do we upskill them? How do we onboard them when they're new staff? How do we train staff to come up the ranks through from being technical and having been on the tools since an apprentice level to now going into a leadership role and learning how to use a computer, how to use budgets and forecasting and managing teams and having difficult conversations. So it was a really interesting path that kind of led me down that way, really.
Fascinating. There's a lot to unpack there, and I feel like we're going to unpack some of it in the session today. So yeah, that's fascinating. And I really love those super challenges that L&D departments face all over the world continually. And you've highlighted a few of them there, especially how do you get training to someone in the middle of a desert, all that kind of stuff, which is genuine problems that people are trying to solve every day. And that leads us nicely onto the next question, because we're here to talk about learning challenges. And I think one of the big challenges you mentioned a moment ago, and one that you faced over the course of your career, is that deskless worker pool. So how do we engage that group with appropriate training? So can you start by talking us through some of the specific issues you've encountered with those groups? And then after that, for context, I want to ask, you know, how did you address those challenges and what did you learn? But first of all, let's maybe talk about what the challenges were in the first place.
Well, some of the challenges have been, well, the traditional methods would have been take them off the shop floor, off of their customer facing work, to go sit in a meeting room and deliver it in a very traditional sense, face to face. That was used to be the way of doing it, because that was the only way, really. And so it was very much taken off the shop floor, but also they didn't like to learn that way. They, you know, switch off. They don't absorb things in terms of learning very well when they're sat in a meeting room just listening to someone talking and watching some slides. They want to learn by doing. And so in there you get on the job training, and that's really good of, you know, see and then do. But inherently you also then get sometimes people passing down bad habits, or that's just the way that they've always done it, but it's not the way it should be done, because Dave's been there 20 years and that's just how it's always been done. And so it was quite interesting then going into the digital realm of learning technologies as it's evolved, and then really leaning into those technologies to deliver training to deskless workers. So utilizing the likes of virtual reality and creating a virtual job simulation where they can put the equipment on and they can put the headset on and they can go into an area where they can develop those skills sort of tangibly. But also by doing that and by having a, for instance, learning technology go out, for instance, virtual reality, it ensures that everybody is now singing off the same hymn sheet. It's one source of truth. You take what is the global process and documentation of how that process should be done, and now you've got everybody learning the same way and the right way. So in turn, you start to see some of your metrics come down. You start to see what's called human error, where people have literally made a human error, and it's sometimes a bit catastrophic, especially in the world of working with high voltage or very demanding customer. For instance, if it's the latency of a millisecond for a financial customer, for instance, and you can't afford that drop when you're, you know, teaching somebody with live equipment and live systems, it gives them a nice area to not only build their competence of it, but also their confidence. There's been some customers we've had that have got very demanding security protocol to go in and out of their spaces. And if you don't adhere to that, it's very mission impossible. There's lasers, you set one off and trigger something and alarms go off. And that customer can fine us for triggering their alarm, but also not responding in the right way for their security protocol that they have set in. So to give somebody a safe environment in a virtual sense where they can practice over and over again, they can make those mistakes without causing any damage, but it also will give them that confidence when they do walk up to the real thing in real life and try and put it into practice. They've got that confidence up, which is really lovely. And that's something you can't teach in a classroom traditionally. And that's, you know, something you can teach live on a system by watching and doing, but it's not really the ideal way of doing it. So it's been quite interesting to lean into the learning technologies of the last few years and really start using AI, AR, VR, but also blended deliveries of delivering things around the world, which has been quite interesting.
Brilliant. So yeah, I like that. So challenges are, I guess, taking them out of work for a start for a long period of time, unengaging training in a classroom environment, but most importantly, them not actually getting to practice what they're doing. And the solution to some of that has been things like virtual reality and different technology. And I really love the single source of truth. That's so important, isn't it? Because let's be honest, so much of our learning in the workplace is done through what our colleagues and peers tell us and show us. And if they're doing it wrong in the first place, then you're kind of, yeah, exactly. you're starting on the back foot, aren't you?
Peer-to-peer learning has got its time and its place, but when you're dealing with mission critical processes or procedures, then, you know, you need to be quite accurate with what you're doing from a global documentation point of view.
Of course. Yeah. But for like so many reasons, for, you know, safety, for insurance, for like compliance, for everything. So yeah, that makes loads of sense. So that's your kind of, I would call that more like the extreme area of deskless working, kind of very high risk, you know, you could potentially set off alarms or there's health and safety issues. And then what about maybe, you know, fast forward to maybe, you know, what you're doing at the moment, what you're working on in terms of maybe deskless workers still, but probably lower risk in terms of being able to train and develop in those environments. And just for context, we're talking about a retail environment here. So deskless workers in retail. So maybe talk us through some of the challenges you're seeing at the moment in the retail space. And then, yeah, we'd love to hear about what some of the solutions off the back of that are as well.
Absolutely. So I currently am working in the retail space for a very large toy retailer. And it's been interesting for me to learn the retail world, having come from a background of sort of cybersecurity and technology. So it's been really interesting to learn the world of retail, but also similar challenges are faced. How do you deliver learning to people that are on the shop floor, that are customer facing, that work shift work? One particular store might have 200 staff if it's a flagship store, but not all of them are there full time. Some of them are seasonal, some of them are student workers, some of them are part time. And so it's quite interesting to try and deliver to a workforce that are not constantly on shift like sort of a normal full time role would be, but also learning how to do that in a retail space. So it's obviously challenges, but it's different challenges. And so this time, a lot of the things I'm looking to solve is for how do you deliver the training to those in store? For instance, anything from a new hire onboarding track. Possibly at the moment, traditionally, the way that training is delivered in store has been, we will send out globally to the store managers like a training pack of like PowerPoint slides and some trainer notes and do trainer training sessions. And then it's up to store manager to then deliver that training to their staff, fill in manually in an Excel sheet that they've completed the training for all their staff, and send it back to us at head office to file away. And that works in essence, but it's not future-proof. And so we're not leaning into the technology side to be able to deliver that training again from that one global source of truth, rather than it being diluted in the Chinese whispers effect further down the line, and also giving mixed messages too, especially when you're dealing with global processes and procedures. So one of the things we're looking at the moment is developing an app with a third-party company and having gamification come through. Having gamification, having fun, playing and learning as you go, battling against other stores and having that sort of competitive edge going on. And also realizing outside of the bubble of their own store that, you know, they are part of a bigger picture, a bigger company outside of their going to work in a shop for the day. And having that sort of nice sense of morale within the team, but it also alleviates the pressure on the managers and having to deliver the same amount of training 20 times over to the different staff in store because they're all on different shifts. So it's interesting to solve for different challenges this time.
Yeah, I don't envy you because I feel like retail, and I think hospitality definitely fits into this as well, where you have seasonal workers, you have part-time workers, you have students that are coming into work at the weekends that aren't there all the time and are almost kind of poke their head in for a couple of shifts and then they're gone for a week and then they're back the next weekend. You know, it's really tough to give, I guess, a consistent experience to these people, regardless of where they are in the life cycle. Do you have a way that you kind of think about an approach part-time or seasonal people that's slightly different to the full-timers, or how do you square that circle is what I'm getting at?
So from the corporate standpoint, from sort of head office, it's, we have to, obviously as a corporate company, there are certain things that we have, all employees have to do annually, whether it's data privacy or compliance. And there's obviously, you know, the challenges there as to, you know, everybody has to do it by, you know, law, by, from the company side of things, but how do you deliver that to people that are only in maybe 4 hours of a week when they're on shift? So in my role, I have to be the gatekeeper between the corporate and the stores. So of a lot of training that the corporate side wants to push down throughout the year, for instance, like data privacy, brand training, compliance. There are areas that we have to protect from the retail side, which is where I come in as the gatekeeper. All the busy times, for instance, November, December, Easter holidays, summer holidays, where you haven't got the time to be taking each member off of the shop floor to train them in front of a computer. And there's only one computer in the back office for everyone to use if it's an e-learning. And yeah, it's just not really sustainable doing that going forward. So it really is a case of protecting those times where the store staff are really busy and they haven't got that bandwidth to be able to do the training, but also giving them training just in time as well, giving them training in time for the busy season so they can have those conversations with customers, that they are confident on the shop floor. And it's good to be able to give them that tools knowing that busy time is coming up too.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess the app is kind of part of the solution there in a way that you can, that really enables that just-in-time capability.
And it's on demand too, which is nice. They can do it as they need to and when they can.
Yeah, like you say, if they get a bit of a slow Saturday morning, say, or something like that, and they know they can access it in a couple of clicks, then that makes a big difference.
And it's fun too. It's a fun game to play.
Yeah, and I guess then you don't have people queuing for the computer out the back, do you? You
know, exactly, that frees up the computer for the manager to do rotor work or, you know, any of this back office admin that they need to do. And it definitely, frees up the space, because back behind the store, there's not that much space really when you've got stock rooms. So it really is for them to sit maybe on a chair in the kitchen area on an iPad and do the training there. It's much better rather than taking up the one computer that's in the back office.
Yeah, big time. I wanted to ask you as well about product training, because this is super important in retail and it's got to be one of the big ones because it's a very innovative company that you work with. There's lots and lots of new toy products coming out all the time. And so, you know, how do you manage that flow of information from head office through to the people who are at the coalface talking to customers about these? How does that dynamic work at the moment? And also, I guess, what challenges have you faced with that? How are you solving them? You can see there's a pattern here, Rebecca, the questions I'm asking.
So it's interesting. So my team do work with the product team to know a cadence of what's coming out and when. My team then put together the communications that goes out to the stores to tell them of this new product. So we're the go-between between the designer and the product team and then the retail store. And so it's up to us to do it in a timely manner before, you know, the deadline before that the product is due to hit the stores in the stock room, to let them know it's coming. It's all very scheduled to the minute. So we have a secure messaging system between the corporate side and all the stores globally. And we literally have to wait till the second we're allowed to announce it to the stores before we can press send on that message.
Okay.
Wow. So at the moment, it's up to us to compile that. It is a little bit old school at the moment in that we've put it on 5 slides, maybe PowerPoint slides, and then they print it out in store and they put it up on their notice board in the back office, so that the staff know that they can read up about the product. It gives them not only information about the product itself, but also some background on the product, maybe from the designer, the history, also for them to upsell or to sell across sideways to another product that they might be interested in if that's the genre that customer likes. And then the product arrives in store and then it's in the back office and it's all got big sort of red stickers of embargoed until certain date, until it can go out to the shelves. And then it's then that you start to see it come to life of the store associate having those conversations with the customers, telling them about the product, bringing the product to life. And so it's really important for my team to give those couple of pages of the product overview, bring it into life, because now that store associate has to bring it to life to the customer and storytell. And it's not always about making a sale either. It's about the experience of being in that store. It's about the experience of the product and walking out with the product in your bag. And it's definitely an experience versus just a normal store, which is quite nice.
Yeah, experiential. I like that. And I think I think there's a big play still, especially in like a retail environment. And, you know, the simplicity of having something printed off and on a notice board is, I hope, still doesn't go away anytime soon, because that is, you have your big source of truth that is in the staff room that you can go and read and swat up on any time you like. I think that's super important still. So old school, but I feel like that's something that should remain in place.
It is. It would be nice in an ideal world if we had the technology rollout, is to have maybe a screen with it sort of going round on the screen, bringing it to life with animations perhaps in the back office. Because obviously we have to think sustainably, and is it really viable going forward to keep globally printing out all these bits of paper for every product that comes out? you know, is there a better way that we could do it that is more sustainable? And it probably is, but relies on the technology side as the infrastructure to be there to uphold that idea.
Yeah, you're right. Screens, and then you can like push messages and whatever straight into location. Yeah, yeah.
That's the dream. That's what we're working towards anyway.
Very cool. Very cool. Great. So let's move on to the next question, Rebecca, which is around some advice on someone who's moving into a role where they may be responsible for a large deskless workforce. I feel like you've got tons of experience here because you've actually helped train or coordinate, manage, influence deskless workforces of all sorts of different varieties and across different countries as well, which is fascinating. What kind of pieces of advice would you give to someone in R&D who's maybe coming into that right now? What should they be looking out for?
I would say definitely look at learning technology. In the last 5 to 10 years, there's been an absolute jump in technology, especially from the learning side. If you go to learning tech, you know, in April, it's just awe-inspiring, the technology that's out there to be able to help people now. So I definitely would recommend going to learning tech, seeing what's on the market, having conversations with people trying to solve similar challenges in other industries. For instance, I found going to learning networking events and chatting to somebody maybe who works for doing a similar sort of role, but maybe for someone who's gas engineers or satellite engineers, and sort of they have the same challenges of how do you deliver to the field when they're not sat at a desk and their time is critical and very ring-fenced. It's just find out how people are doing it in different industries. Use things to your advantage. See how things have been done already, what worked, what didn't work. Have the conversations with the stakeholders. Find out their pain points, their challenges. Where can you alleviate and help solve for some of those challenges and pressures that they're feeling for their workforce and their staff? And really just lean into what is out there in the market, because there's so much out there now, more so than it ever has been before. And delivering training now to deskless workers is probably the easiest it's ever been because of technology, which is wonderful. And COVID obviously really sprung board us into that world quicker than a lot of people were expecting. But now, I mean, it's crazy. And now we're 4 years post, you know, first COVID round, which is crazy to think that time. But also in the last 4 years, it's just enabled everybody in the digital world to just really lean into that technology more, lean into the new things. Don't be scared of AI. Don't be scared of things just because it's new. Get in there, play around, see if you can break it, come up with different solutions and ways of doing things. And I think that's my advice to somebody, is just to learn themselves. We're in learning development because we like to learn, so we should get in there and learn the lessons of what worked, learn what other people are doing, learn how technology works, and come up with solutions that harnesses all of those things.
Brilliant. Lean into technology. Yeah, and you're so right as well. And what's your view on, your personal view on bring your own device? I know this is an issue for some companies, especially if you're, you know, a lot larger business, in terms of allowing people or encouraging people to consume training on their own device versus not. I've actually asked this of a couple of people on the podcast because it's a really interesting one. And I just wondered what your, I guess you personally sit on it, but yeah, what do you say? Would you be encouraging businesses to say to people, bring your own device, or to provide them with their own? What's your
at the moment, we're having that challenge at the moment with the app that we've rolled out to the stores. Some of the technology for the store devices isn't quite there. It's not up to date enough to support the technology we're rolling out to people. So people have been using their own devices. We've been putting disclaimers on there as they load it up to say, because they work shift work and they're hourly paid, if you do this on your own device outside of your working hours, you will not be compensated as such for doing your training outside of your time. And obviously you've got to think of the type of training, what it is. So is it something that is sensitive to the company? Is it something that's sensitive to your processes and how you operate? Is it your secret sauce of a company? Because once it is on someone's personal device and it's outside of their working hours, you have no control over who's looking at it, where it's going, what it's doing.
Yeah, could they be showing could their friend be at a competitor's and they're at a party and they're showing them, yeah, you know, maybe. What I mean, that kind of thing. Yeah, no, I hadn't thought about
you
that.
You have no control really over it. Whereas if it's on a company device, at least you've got some control over it, especially if it's through your SSO and you need it to be on a company device for that reason, yeah, as well, for tracking. I mean, I'm not saying don't use personal devices, especially if the infrastructure technology isn't there for what you're trying to roll out anyway, digitally. But I think it's just a case of be sensible in how that's used and mitigate anything that's sensitive being used on company devices.
Yeah, I think you probably got the balance absolutely spot on there, because say they're doing some, I don't know, productivity development or listening to something on well-being or watching something on being a better communicator or something like that. That kind of generic behavioral skills-based development stuff, I feel, could probably sit quite nicely on anybody's device. There's nothing necessarily company specific or sensitive, and that sort of stuff. You're enabling usage and engagement and stuff, aren't you, by making it as easy as possible for your workers. But yeah, you're right, you've got to be super careful if there's anything that has company secrets.
Be sensible with how you use it.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Okay, great, very good answer. So thank you for
that. I'm interested to see what other people said now.
Yeah, so there's a couple of podcasts already live, actually. I think the general feeling was similar, so it's something along the lines of, yeah, providing it's nothing too sensitive, then you're kind of better off allowing people to use their own device, because you're enabling more learning and usage than kind of locking everything down. Again, you know, big caveats here, massively depends on your industry. If you're working in a nuclear power plant or something like that, obviously there's only certain things that you can, you know, have on a personal device, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, it varies, doesn't it? But yeah, I think, yeah, that's nice. If you can lead with that mindset of let's make this as convenient as possible for the learner, that's a good way to start.
Definitely. And also not to push it on people. If I was working, you know, in store and someone told me on my personal phone I have to do this corporate training, I'd be like, sorry, that's my personal phone. Yeah. I'm not going to be doing it. So it's really up to the person as well as to do they want to use their device for that purpose.
That's an interesting one also. Yeah. So you've got to make sure that it is them pulling it rather than you pushing it in that regard. Yeah.
Because these days our own devices, our own phones are like most personal prized possessions in the world. Everything personal to us is on there. Do we want companies to be putting their stuff on there and God knows where it's going or what it's doing? So, you know, there is that element from the staff point of view as well as to do they want it on their device?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there should always be a choice, shouldn't it? I think it's like if they're happy to do it and you're happy to, then great. But otherwise, as a business, you've got to provide alternatives. Very cool. So I wanted to ask you a bit about retail and training retail staff. So what do you think the future of retail training looks like to you? And you've hinted at this a little bit. You mentioned AI, VR and things like that. And I know you look at a lot of this stuff. You're quite forward thinking in terms of the initiatives you've been working on. Where do you see it going, retail training? Or what are you excited about? What have you seen in the last year, especially that you're keen to make happen in the future?
I'm excited for the technology side to come through, because stores, as like fancy as they are when you're the customer and you're front of house, like with hospitality, the minute you go back of house, it's still very old school and traditional. So I'd like the back side of the store to sort of become more up to date, more current. Maybe simple switches, like we said, of having a screen where we can push information out that's not people printing stuff out and, you know, putting it onto the notice board and hope that somebody will see it on their way to the kitchen. It would be nice if we brought things more into the digital age. I see VR being quite popular as well. Again, in back office of a store, you're limited on space, especially in the storeroom and the back office. So if we can bring virtual technology into there in terms of VR, that would be much easier in terms of them learning in a virtual way. But also it would be cool for them again to come out of their bubble of their one store and see that they are connected to a much bigger picture of other stores globally and other areas of corporate, for them to maybe battle against other people, to have an avatar, to go play against somebody else whilst they're learning. And it's the gamification side and it's the learning as they play. And so I really think that there's a lot of scope to bring technology in, depending on the type of retail store. You know, we could even go into AR and have heads-up glasses for like stock and storeroom. And again, we can push information out there. When I was at the previous company doing the digital infrastructure and working with the mechanical and electrical engineers, one of the things we were looking at was Google glasses, head-up displays, and having them looking at, say, a generator and something that they need to take apart with, you know, screws and nuts and bolts whilst working at high voltage that's also affecting customer live system, is to have that heads-up display where they can, like mechanics use, like aviation use, like the medical industry use, have it where it gives them the guidance of turn this left 4 times, now pull this bit out, now do this. And so again, you've got the learning and the flow of work and on the job. And it would be nice to bring some of that technology that's already been used in those industries and bring it more to industries where it's not being used. I think there's a lot of scope there, but obviously all this new technology comes at a price.
Yes.
Especially when you're such a big global company with lots and lots of different devices, lots of updating. The minute you've gone through the internal gymnastics of getting it all approved and rolling it all out, the technology is already out of date. Plus, you need the staff internally in terms of the training team to keep that up to date, to develop that content in-house and not rely on external companies to do that for you. And there are some really good companies out there. When I've been to the learning networks and the learning events, I've really listened to some of the people talking who work at companies that do exactly this. And it's actually mind-blowing to see how you can now, in-house with your own instructional designers on a training team, create virtual reality content as easy as putting PowerPoint slides together for a presentation. And you can just push it out to all the devices globally. And it really solves that problem of shift work, customer work, everything's time pressured. One source of truth, learning as you do, as opposed to sitting at a desk doing e-learning and a quiz. There's a lot to be said for what's out there and what still needs to enter the realm of the retail world.
And what are your thoughts on combining what we call kind of like the softer skills around customer service? So, you know, your communication, how you meet and greet, I guess soft scale sales skills almost, with virtual reality, augmented reality and things like that. Do you think that's a way that retail could go in terms of, I don't know, you put a headset on and you have a conversation with a virtual customer in a safe environment instead of having to practice in real life on the shop floor or role play awkwardly with your colleagues?
Yeah, I guess it's a bit like if you like a pop star up on a stage when they're on tour and they've got someone in their ear giving them stage directions as to what to do. I guess it's similar sort of experience, a slight different. But it's interesting, yeah, how do you bring that onto the shop floor and in the flow? And so some of the learning that we're doing at the moment is looking around neurodiversity, because we are a toy company and a toy store. So, you know, we do have presence in busy shopping malls, and maybe the child is neurodiverse. Maybe they're finding it overwhelming to be in a shopping mall environment, and when they'd rather be at home playing with toys rather than being dragged around the shops by their mum. So it's interesting the skills that you have to upskill our staff on of how to have a conversation with the parent, how to have a conversation with the child. If the child's feeling overwhelmed and they're having a meltdown, how do we help them have a better experience in store? How do we help alleviate some of the pressure maybe that the parent's feeling? But also how to guide them, not with a heavy sell, but to guide them to help them of why they're coming to store, what is it they're looking for, can we make their day a little bit better in any way? They're clearly, you know, under pressure at the moment. And so giving our staff those skills of how to have those conversations, how to look out for those signs, possibly a lot around non-verbal cues and verbal cues. So perhaps they're hovering around a particular item on the shelving that they might want some help with, but they haven't asked for any help. You know, how do you get those non-verbal cues to go and approach them and say, would you like to know more information about this? Would you like to take it out the box and have a go? What, you know, should we get hands on and give them that experience? And so it's interesting, again, to teach their skills, and especially, again, to staff that's part-time, seasonal, student workers. How do you keep that consistency of delivering that sort of learning to them? It's not like a desk-based corporate environment where you have a sales team that have got targets to hit and they're there every single day from 8 till 6 at their desk, and you can deliver the training maybe in coaching throughout cohorts and sit with them and mentor them. It's not quite the same experience. And so it's very interesting to try and solve for those challenges for that audience, given the nature of the environment of where they work.
Yeah, that is a really interesting one, actually. And I hadn't even considered that. But having myself been in a toy shop with a child having a meltdown, an empathetic and understanding, yes, customer service person is very much liked. And I almost feel obliged to buy something after being helped out, as I have been in the past by people. So yeah, no, that makes loads of sense. And yeah, again, it's just one of the many ways or different kind of challenges that you're facing in that environment these days.
Yeah, definitely.
Brilliant.
Things that I'd never considered as a customer walking into a store. And now when I am in a shopping mall and I'm going to lots of different types of stores, I do find myself looking at the staff in a slightly different way, wondering how do they approach it in this store, wondering what sort of training that they receive, how do they receive it. Also, do the store staff feel that they need more training? Do they feel comfortable and confident? If they're only in there 4 hours a week because they're a student the rest of the time, do they feel it's something they've got confidence in? Is it something they enjoy? How can we make their experience as staff working for the company better and easier? and really keeping that two-way dialogue going with your employees and keeping the morale up.
Yeah, definitely, because those people working in a Saturday job could well become...
Oh, especially around Christmas.
Exactly. And they could become enormous advocates for the brand as well. And they could be future store managers or head office workers or whatever, couldn't they? So that experience. And given how expensive recruitment and retention is in, especially in retail, in hospitality, in all these higher turnover industries, yeah, that early experience with onboarding and learning and stuff has got to be critical.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you go into a store, okay, you've got the products on the shelving, but you really ultimately look at the experience and the staff, and they are the face of the company to you as a customer when you walk in. So it's really ensuring that your staff are in a good place, that they are happy, that they are enjoying what they do. It might not be their lifelong career path, but while they're there, are they having a good time? Is there anything as a store manager you can do to support them and help them? Supporting the store managers from a corporate aspect and knowing, you know, the skills and the tools that they've got in their toolbox to help their staff and how to help give them that confidence to deliver better to the customers and have a better workforce.
Brilliant. Final question, because I feel like I've taken up enough of your time today, Rebecca, but I've really appreciated going through all this with you. And this is the same question I'm asking everybody in this season of the podcast, by the way. So can you give us 3 to 5 practical tips for someone coming into learning and development right now? So it doesn't have to be into a retail role, it could be into anything to do with L&D. Say you're mentoring a new graduate, or you've got somebody who's from a different line of work that's coming into learning. What would you be telling them at the moment? What should they be thinking about?
I would be telling them, learn their network, learn their industry. So not only the industry of the company they work for, but also the L&D industry too, because we are SMEs from 2 different perspectives, the company and the industry versus also being the L&D professional. So as an L&D professional, obviously your stakeholders, the audience in which you're delivering training to, they look to you as you're the SME of learning and development. So really understand, what does that mean? What does it mean, learning and development? It means so many different things now than it used to. So really lean into that. Lean into your network. Go to all the exhibitions. Go to all the networking events. Go see what else is on the market. Go to Learning Tech. Go to the award ceremonies. See what's out there, what's going on in the L&D market, because it moves so fast. And your network is really the thing that will keep you from job to job. In all the jobs I've been in and all the industries I've worked in L&D, my network has been my core. And it's been really lovely, because not only are they what I consider my friends now after years of, you know, seeing each other go from company to company and keeping that dialogue and that relationship going with them, but also they're there as your fellow peers to lean against of, I don't know how to deliver this type of training to my audience. These are the challenges I'm facing. How would you approach it? And with the technology side, really keep up to date with what's out there. Go and play around with them, some of them. Go to Learning Tech. Go speak to some of the companies. Play with the technology. See if it will work. Don't make the mistake of going for the shiny technology thing because everybody's doing it and it's what the industry says you should do, because it might not work for your audience. It might not work for the business challenges that your company needs you to solve for. So be very careful with going for the shiny technology things, because it might not always be the solution you're looking for.
Be thorough, basically, is what you're saying, with your research, and make sure you look at all the different elements. Yeah, I agree with that. And your network as well. I think probably worth shouting out the LPI. I know you've been a big part of them for a long time and a fantastic network for the L&D industry. So yeah, that's one to explore if you are new in learning, and they host lots of good events.
Definitely get enrolled with either the LPI, you can do CIPD, but definitely it's worth doing if you're new to career on that L&D path. LPI, definitely.
And I don't know about you, Rebecca, but I'm a vendor as well. So I'm the person that I'm part of the group that people in learning and development least like talking to, because they think I'm always trying to sell them something. But I've found that this industry, out of, you know, others that I've worked in, is probably the friendliest and nicest in terms of willingness to share information, willingness to have a chat, willingness to do various other things. And so, yeah, if you are new into L&D, I think don't be afraid, because if you reach out to people, a lot of the time it will be a positive response.
Absolutely. We're all in this industry because we want to help people. Yeah. And we're just a lovely community of people just wanting to do a good job, but help other people to succeeding as well.
Exactly. Brilliant. Well, that seems like a nice note to end on. Thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you coming on and talking to us. And is there somewhere where people should connect with you if they're interested in following you or learning more about what you do?
Definitely on LinkedIn, Rebecca Tisdale. And I'm usually found at all of the industry events. So Learning Tech, award ceremonies, LPI Learning Live events. You'll definitely find me at generally most of their L&D networking events. So please come up and say hi.
Great. Yeah.
You see me.
And tell Rebecca you heard about her on the Learning and Development Challenges podcast. That'd be great. Right. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful rest of your day. And yeah, we'll be back very soon with another episode from the Learning and Development Challenges.